You're listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford, Tufts Free Farm Radio. This is Academics on Air. We'll be starting in a few minutes.
Welcome, this is a farmhouse. We have cluster flies, alas. And this time of year is bad.
To the second episode of Academics on Air with me, Jenna, and my co-host, Marissa. If you are new to the show or you just need a reminder, pretty much we are interviewing students about readings from their classes that they found interesting or engaging or just something that kind of stuck out at them that maybe they want to discuss more. Last week we had Celeste with a reading from Sylvia
Federici,
thank you. And this week we have a friend of Marissa, a non-Tufts student, so we're really expanding our guest selection. So yeah, we're going to play one more song and then we're going to dive right into the introduction, so stay tuned.
The last song you heard was from Fish. It was called Farmhouse and not super thematic to our theme today. And the next song is a bit of a comedy bit by Tom Lehrer. And it is very relevant. Here we go.
let me in, introduce myself. You think I'm some kind of chemical elf who increases your economic wealth. Well, I got some news for you, so listen up. Get one thing straight, I'm closing in on your romantic mate, and I'm in that snack that your kid just ate, and I'm coming for you. So say hello, say howdy do to this little evil inside of you. I ain't your normal hormone, I'm a chemical corruptor, the mean molecule called the endocrine disruptor. I'm going out on the town tonight, I'll hit your hormone receptor sites. You may think they're locked up tight, but I got a skeleton key. I'll go in and just hang around, blocking out those hormone clowns and sending funny messages that mess around with your gender identity. So say hello, say howdy do to this little evil inside of you. I ain't your normal hormone, I'm a chemical corrector, the mean molecule called the endocrine disruptor. Mother's milk, caviar, you'll find that I'm in every ounce. PCBs, DDT, and a host of other chemicals you can't pronounce. I'll make it hard to procreate. You're in store for a very long wait for a baby that's just second rate. Hey, I can make that baby stupid too. And here's the point I want to emphasize. You'll never stare into that baby's eyes if I cut your sperm count down to size. And that's just what I'm gonna do. So say hello, say how to do little evil inside of you. I ain't your normal hormone, I'm a chemical corrector, the mean molecule, mad molecule, evil molecule called the endocrine disruptor. I'd like to thank all the chemical companies of the world for making this song possible. Thank you and good night and good luck.
Okay, welcome back. You just heard Hormone Havoc, parentheses, the endocrine disruptor song, and correction, that is by the artist Alan Atkinson, not the artist I previously mentioned. So, it is my honor to introduce our guest for today, my good friend from home, all the way from elementary school through high school, Lulu, and she is currently a student at Temple University in Philadelphia, and studying environmental sciences, and has quite a history going back to neurobiology and all other types of sciences. So she will be informing us on a scientific and quite environmentally relevant paper today. Lulu, can you hear us? Can you talk in?
Hello, WMFO listeners.
Hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm actually joined at my home today with fellow Temple student Georgia Mae Lively and friend Georgia Mae Lively.
Hello, Tuff.
Hello, Tuff.
Hello, we are so thrilled to have you. And this feels very, I'm very impressed with our professional development of hosting callers.
Expanding our network across the Eastern Seaboard.
Amazing. So can you tell
guys
us
truly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Really innovators in radio.
Wow. Can you tell us a little bit about the paper you're going to read from today?
So yeah, this paper is called, wait for it, Developmental Effects of Endocrine Disrupting Chemicals in Wildlife and Humans. And it's by Colburn et al., and that et al. Is comprised of Von Saal and Soto. And actually, I learned this morning that Soto is a Tufts professor or researcher, I assume. So this piece is like pretty fitting one to be on your show. So basically, the article is all about how all of these chemicals were released into the environment following World War II. And these chemicals are were used commonly for farming purposes. Here, let me take a look in the article. I'll have a little excerpt that I can read.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, this is just from the beginning of the article. Large numbers and large quantities of endocrine disrupting chemicals have been released into the environment since World War II. Many of these chemicals can disturb development of the endocrine system and of the organs that respond to endocrine signals in organisms indirectly exposed during prenatal and or postnatal life. So when we talk about the endocrine system in this article, it's mostly referring to the activity of estrogen in the human body and also in the bodies of different types of wildlife. But so these chemicals we're talking about, so that would be DDT, dioxin, I have some others listed here as well, PCBs, chlordane, dieldrin, all of these names are like complex chemical names, but, you know, different types of agricultural chemicals that are released into the environment. And they act as estrogen agonists. So basically, an agonist is a chemical that can enhance the activity of other molecules in the body. So for example, a chemical like DDT has the ability to increase the activity of estrogen in the human body, or enhance the effects that estrogen would have. And the presence of an estrogen agonist in wildlife can be super, super insane. So there were a bunch of studies that were done on animals whose parents had been exposed to endocrine disrupting chemicals, and I have some results from the study that I'm going to read here. So these are some of the side effects of exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals in animals. So birds have abnormal thyroid function, and many birds are unable to reproduce or have a lot of trouble reproducing if exposed to these chemicals. Also, there are a lot of malfunctions that arise in the shell creation process. So either the shell like is too thin, or excuse me, not the shell, what is it called? The surface of an egg. What is that called? It is a shell.
The membrane.
Yeah. What do you call that? An eggshell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, you know, you ever say words for a really long time, like your name, and you just say it over and over again, and then one day randomly you're like, but what does it mean? For some reason I had that experience with shell just now. But yeah, so anyway, back to the bird shells. So basically, yeah, like these eggshells will thin in birds and for turtles as well. The turtle eggs will have super thin shells, and that really interferes with the growth process for the babies that are inside. Another really interesting thing is that chemicals that interfere with estrogen release can cause defeminization and masculinization of different types of animals, especially fish, different gastropods, and birds. So I'm trying to see if I can find this section. There's a section of the article that discusses how some species that was exposed to DDT... So there was a study that was conducted on Lake Ontario, and the animals that were living in the Ontario area were being exposed to PCB residues. And these birds, newly hatched birds, were being exposed to PCB, and the male birds were developing these structures that really looked like ovaries, and the female birds' ovaries were kind of like developed in a really abnormal way. So really insane that these chemicals that are released into the environment by big companies can have such insane effects as to kind of like alter, you know, the sexual organs in the human body. It's very crazy. And I don't know, when I first read this article, I was surprised that there isn't more, I guess, more pressure on companies who use certain chemicals to go through like a more rigorous vetting process before they're chosen. And the issues with DDT that we know about now, I don't know, it just seems kind of crazy to me that this insanely dangerous chemical was released so recently in human history. You know, you would think that we've gotten to a place in history where we could prevent something like that from happening, but obviously it's not quite true. So yeah, any comments on those excerpts? Got a little rambly towards the end. Sorry about that, but
That's okay. Thank you very much. I feel like I just attended your TED Talk, and I'm much more knowledgeable about the science of endocrine disruptors.
Yeah, no, thank you for providing some context. As someone who does not study biology or environmental studies, it was good. And maybe some of our listeners out there too who are not as well versed, it was definitely helpful for me. So I guess one question that I had was maybe like, how are these endocrine disruptors getting released into the environment? Like, what exactly ways are they getting put, like, leaked into water sources? Like, what are companies doing, either purposefully or not on purpose, to have this effect?
That's a great question. So currently, even though DDT is regulated in the United States, it's not regulated as strictly in other countries. And chemicals like DDT have a very low vapor pressure, which means that they can evaporate into the atmosphere really easily. So right now, DDT will evaporate into the air in countries where it's still legal to produce DDT and just become a part of the general atmosphere. And people all over the world are exposed to DDT that way. So air, just like travel through air, is the most common way that these chemicals spread. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
And before we went on air today, Jenna asked me kind of an interesting question that was basically saying, if almost all of the effects of endocrine disrupting chemicals are negative, why are we even producing them in the first place? And I think my answer was essentially just, the interests of industry are what is driving this. Do you agree with that, Lulu? Like, you know, why isn't there a stronger activism against, or a stronger successful activism against, endocrine disrupting chemicals?
I mean, you know, when Rachel Carson released Silent Spring, there was like insane public outcry over the use of DDT. So I think that really, like, when information about DDT was initially released, people freaked out. Like, they did not want DDT in the environment, but
The release of Silent Spring really sparked the modern environmental movement in the 70s and basically led to the establishment of the EPA by President Nixon. So,
I really think that in terms of DDT, that's like one of the most, an example of one of the most like successful public responses to a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, I don't know. To answer your question, I would say I think you're wrong.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that I'm wrong in that case.
Yeah.
Do you think, and I'm also curious, because the article does discuss both human and non-human animals who are impacted by these chemicals, do you feel like activism and, you know, outcry against the negative effects are stronger for those cases that are human health effects or those cases that are animal endangerment and animal health effects?
Oh, absolutely. Most of the studies that were done on animals were completed because, well, actually, I don't know what the exact timeline is, but I know that the effects of endocrine disrupting chemicals on wildlife, interest in that topic came about because women who were eating wildlife were having babies that were really ill. So,
so like a combination of the two.
I guess the interest in wildlife is partially, maybe if not entirely, motivated by the human effects.
And I guess I don't know if you have knowledge on this, but has there been perhaps similar like legislation in terms of protecting both people and animals from these endocrine disruptors, or is it kind of an area that needs more development and advocacy?
I think that in the United States, legislation has sufficiently cut off the use of chemicals, endocrine disrupting chemicals, but like I mentioned before, other countries don't have a strict regulation when it comes to endocrine disrupting chemicals, and it doesn't really matter where they're being released from. They're just able to penetrate the atmosphere pretty easily from anywhere. The United States has done a pretty good job at regulating chemicals, but it's the type of issue that requires all places to contribute if we want to diminish the effects.
Can I add two vignettes that are a little bit separate but related to the topic that we're discussing now?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. So the first one is that your discussion of atmosphere and atmosphere's role in this is really interesting to me, because I didn't really know that DDT could evaporate and had impacts that weren't just in the area where it was sprayed or applied. And I read an article for an anthropology course recently called Suspension, and it uses the atmosphere and ideas of the air very loosely, not in a scientific sense, but in an idea of the ways in which our atmosphere holds us as humans and kind of holds all of the negative pollution that we have produced, and we are just like bubbling in this stew of polluted atmosphere. And that even though we view air as very empty and oftentimes pristine, that really it's kind of holding all this pollution in this vital environment that we need to survive. And I would like to read a sentence that's not, I don't know if it will really make clear what the article is about, but I think it's very classic anthropology in a kind of weird modern way. And it says, Suspension serves as a reminder that the upness of a particular air of concern has a duration. To attend to conditions of suspension is to orient not simply to vertical location, but to what potentiates substance to disperse, shift state, relation, and relative concentration, so one might become held in another. So I think that's pretty weird and only relates partly to what you're talking about, but I think that your discussion of DDT and other, you know, pollutants that may be in our atmosphere is really helping to help me think about the ways in which the atmosphere around Earth holds us and supports us and sustains us. And a lot of the pollution that we release into it is super invisible most of the time. So I don't know, any thoughts on that, Lou?
Yeah, I was just thinking that it would be so interesting if you could somehow like attach a dye of some sort or like a
a paint to all of the chemicals that are harmful, like in our environment, and sort of like track the movement of the color as they molecules travel around.
Mm.
And it's so crazy to think that something that doesn't even seem visible or existent, little things in the air, could have such a huge effect on how we feel and act.
My mom used to dye the salt that I would put on my food blue so that we could see how much I was salting my food. And I really think that's what needs to happen with global atmospheric pollution.
We might not be able to see, though, if we dye the
blue. Okay, maybe red or something else.
I meant we might not be able to see then, like, in the air.
Because it's already blue.
Well, no, because if we dye it red, then what if everything's red?
Oh.
We can't see in front of ourselves.
Yeah, good point.
But I like your point.
Yeah. I recently heard someone say, you know, like, what if instead of talking about air pollution in a really vague sense, or like, it's really hard for people to say, like, oh, I can relate to how many parts per million of carbon dioxide are in the atmosphere right now. It's not something that everyone knows and thinks about all the time. But what if we reframed it so everyone, it was such a big deal when we pass a certain marker of like 400 parts per million, like whatever it might be, that the question was like, oh, where were you when we crossed over into 400 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the air, or parts per million of other chemicals or things like that? And I think that would be a really powerful way to make visible the amount of pollution in the air and the atmosphere around us. If you don't have any more thoughts at this moment, anyone who is here in this conversation, I would be happy to move into a related song, a Joni Mitchell tune, and then come back for some more discussion later. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, that sounds like a great note. And also something that... I think that map nerds listening to this radio show will appreciate. Something that I've recently been obsessed with is checking the air quality map for Pennsylvania on a daily basis. So basically, this website that checks air quality in different parts of Pennsylvania creates a map every day that shows like where different chemicals are concentrated. And it's super interesting to think about how pollutants are like moving around in our environment. And I'm just a nerd for math, so it's fun to look at anyway. But recommend for anyone looking for a fun activity to do on a rainy day, check your local air quality map database.
Is there a specific website that you use?
No, honestly, I really just Googled like air quality Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and it popped up.
Cool. Thank you. What a wonderful PSA for all of our listeners out there. Go check your Medford, Somerville, or wherever you are air quality map.
Yeah. Hopefully we won't be surprised too much.
Hopefully. Okay. Thank you so much for your commentary, Lulu, and guest and Jenna. And we will be back after this song.
Sounds great.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Ooh, bah, 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 bah. Ooh, bah, 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 bah.
They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Ooh, bah, bah, bah.
Farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please don't
to go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. We paved paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. We paved paradise, put up a parking lot. We paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Up a parking lot.
Begin.
If you want to save yourself money and help the environment at the same time, consider using rechargeable batteries in your frequently used devices that accept them. Today's NIMH batteries last about as long as alkaline cells under high use, and they can be recharged hundreds of times before needing to be recycled. Packs of rechargeable AA and AAA batteries plus a charger don't cost very much to begin with anymore, and isn't it much more convenient to recharge your batteries than to go to the store and buy new ones anyway? A message from all your green friends here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
You just heard The Beach Boys and their song Don't Go Near the Water, and before that The Beatles with Mother Nature's Son, and both of those songs have a bit of a environmental cautionary tale behind them. You know, we are polluting our environments, and that's not good. Be careful. Yeah. Next up, a song from David Bowie, and then potentially some more conversation later on.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on.
3, 2.
Check ignition and may God's love be with you.
Now it's time to
Okay, that was Space Oddity from David Bowie. And Jenna has some of her own interesting recent readings to share with us.
Yeah, so I don't have, I guess, I don't have any direct quotes because I don't have the book with me. But I have found myself with more free time this semester than in semesters past, so I thought I'd try and get back into reading more for fun. And so recently I started reading a book, it's called Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products, because something that really interests me as a, I don't know, academically and personally is kind of like psychology and economics, the kind of the intersection of the two, which is, I guess, formerly kind of thought of as like behavioral economics or like decision science, and just like how do we kind of understand like the decisions people make? How do we, you know, think about how people, what are they paying attention to and stuff like that? And so this book is kind of looking at, you know, like how do apps kind of like keep people trapped or lure them in and stuff like that? Like what, how do we get them into these like kind of like habit forming like situations that, you know, people are constantly like checking Instagram and stuff like that? And so I haven't gotten very far in the book, but it's been kind of interesting so far. He kind of, the author, he proposes this like model. He calls it like the hook model, and it's like this couple step process in terms of like embedding products into like the lives of people and kind of encouraging this behavior that keeps people like coming back for more. And so I think what's interesting is that it's not necessarily like trying to milk money out of people, it's trying to like milk their time and their energy, kind of like this other currency, less tangible currency, but still something that, you know, companies really want out of people, that's maybe just as valuable as their money, maybe more valuable, because I guess, I don't know, not everyone has a lot of money, but everyone has, you know, time and energy in one way or another, if that makes sense. Yeah. So far it's been interesting, but yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Yeah, kind of scary stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, the book, it kind of, part of it reads as like a, like, oh, look at what companies are doing. And another part of it reads like, this is how you can make your products, like, you know, if you want to do this with your product or something. So it seems like it's a little bit of both.
Have you had any classes that relate to those same topics?
I was in an anthropology of science and technology class, yeah. But I dropped that.
Well, relating to that, that was with Nick Seaver, I assume. Mm-hmm. And I recently, on Wednesday of last week, went to a small lecture he gave that was about, it was called Algorithms and as Culture. And mm-hmm. What you were just saying was reminding me of that as well. You know, the ways in which the way I might engage with online shopping web page or like a music site like Spotify or any of those programs, like the way I engage is the way in which they're going to like hook me more into using that product because of like listeners like you liked this or like just the type of listener that they're imagining me to be.
I think there's lots of different ways depending on the product that they can like hook you or keep you kind of lured in, whether like for Spotify that could be kind of like those Discover Weekly things or whatever, because it's like algorithms, like what Professor Seaver does. I think that's what he studies, right? Mm-hmm. Just like they are trying to understand you and kind of keep you using their app by like generating songs and stuff that they think you will find interesting. At least that's my interpretation of it. That might not be the most, I don't know, academic understanding of it. But other stuff too, like, I don't know, sending you notifications, you know, for apps, like Instagram or something. I don't know, I'm trying to think of other like specific examples. I don't know, like suggestions of like people to follow, and like, I think on Instagram, isn't there like a page where it's like, I don't know, like
discover.
Yeah, it's like curated content in a way for you. Like they're trying to figure out like what it is that you like, and then in the hopes of you, I don't know, going like further down the rabbit hole of their app or their website or something. So It's kind of scary. They got a lot of data on us too.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't. that's all I have to say about the thought as of now.
Cool. Thank you for sharing. I just had an idea of a fun song to play, but I need to look it up. So,
you can just chit chat in the meantime.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if anyone has read anything interesting about, I guess, kind of technology and attention and, you know, kind of capturing people's attention, or just, you know, the pitfalls of technology, if you want to look at it that way. Definitely be interested to hear more about that and read about it too. So send stuff my way.
Yeah, and also as a general PSA for our radio show, please, if you have anything that relates to the topics that we're talking about or something entirely new, send it to us and we'd be happy to have you on air or just include your content in what we're talking about. So you can either call in at 855-915-WMFO, which is
9636,
or you can send an email to academicsonair@gmail.com.
We'd love it if you'd send us an email. I mean, we don't have a preference, but getting email is nice.
We love email. Please send us all of your thoughts in email format. Okay, here we go. We're going into a song by The Police.
Spirits in the Material World by The Police from Ghost in the Machine. The time is now 3:55 p.m. You're listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford, Tufts Free Farm Radio. This has been Academics on Air. Join us again next week, Sunday, 3 to 4 p.m. And again, feel free to email us, at academicsonair@gmail.com if you would like to be a guest on the show, or if you just have something you want to share and you're a little radio shy. We'd love to hear from you either way. Have a great week.